Hello, and we have today our podcast with Yerny Letner Chernych, full professor of human rights and constitutional law at the European Faculty of Law and the Faculty of Government and European Studies of the New University, Ljubljana, Slovenia. Yerny, hello.
Hello, thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to be here at this podcast and to have a conversation with you, Elena.
Thank you. And actually, you are a perfect guest for this podcast because actually, I know just you as a person who are an expert on business and human rights and expert on the rule of law issues. I should say that you published this great book, actually, The Impact of European Institutions on the Rule of Law and Democracy, Slovenia and Beyond, in 2020. And also, I should say, we will share with our listeners the link to the scoping study, regional scoping study on business and human rights in Eastern and Central Europe and Central Asia. And I should say that it was your idea to include this component on the rule of law environment in the region and how it impacts on corporate actors. And that's why my first question to you, actually, what is the situation in the region with the rule of law and why it's important to discuss it when we are talking about business and human rights issues?
Yeah, the rule of law is a principle which is a backbone of any social democracy, of any democracy which is based on laws. And it basically means that the power of the state, but not only state, also non-state actors such as businesses, corporations should be curtailed. So rule of law is it's about, you know, curtailing, limiting potential arbitrariness in the action of government, but also businesses. And having said that, of course, the notion of rule of law, the principle of rule of law, has a lot to do with the current situation in Central Eastern Europe, but also beyond the European continent. Because it's about the power and how we limit the power. And business human rights is very much about limiting the power, as listeners know. It's basically to put obligations and to make sure the business conduct its operation responsibly. So, you know, in Central Eastern Europe, rule of law in the last decade has been something new. In the last decades, coming to the fall of Iron Curtain and democratization, rule of law was not basically the principle which the governments and businesses complied with. You know, it was more about rule by law. You know, although states in Central Eastern Europe, they have had constitutions and rules and laws, but those laws often they were adopted and adapted to the interest of governing elites, which at the same time were very much connected with the business environment. We know that before the Iron Curtain fell, a lot of economies in Eastern Europe have been very much state involved. There was a lot of presence of state in the economy. So after the fall of Iron Curtain, rule of law has become important, but of course it's very difficult, Elena, not to translate that from paper to action. You know, it's almost impossible to do that in a couple of decades, and that's why Central and Eastern European states have been struggling with translating the rule of law not only in the government but also in the business sectors. You know, in Eastern Europe, the way companies have been doing business, it was somehow different than in a more stable environment. And one of the reasons why it was different, because the institutions are not very strong. You know, the institutions such as judiciary or executive or legislative branch are not very strong. There is also very huge presence of corruption or nepotism or vested interest. A lot of I mean, Ukraine perhaps is the prime example, and for sure, Olena, you know much better than me the Ukrainian situation, where a lot of powerful businessmen, oligarchs, you know, when they attained quite a lot of power in the business sector, now then they started to run for elected offices, or they supported other persons who ran for elected office. So, you know, in Central Eastern Europe, rule of law is very much connected to the business and human rights, because it's all about power. So it's about how business can, you know, seize the power, or how politicians can seize the power. And unfortunately, in Eastern Europe, you know, politicians and the businessmen have been very much aligned in, you know, using the power not for public good, not for public interest, not but for their private interest. And that in turn resulted in so many business related violations, ranging from violations of civil and political rights to socioeconomic business related violations. So that's why, you know, rule of law is so much important, and that's why I always bring this up when we talk about business and human rights, because in the end, both business and human rights and rule of law are about limiting power of those who have very extensive power in a society.
Agree with you. And actually, of course, it could be, simplification of how to say it correctly. But I mean, if I
Sure.
ask you, what should be drivers of positive changes, because you mentioned Ukraine, and you know that actually we are trying to implement the different reforms, anti-corruption reform, reforms in judicial system for many years, but we still see, unfortunately, the negative practices and yeah, so, and all Ukrainian society, and I believe in other societies in our regions, people are thinking the same. What should be done to change this situation?
I mean, the first step would be to comply with some basic components of the rule of law, and one of the basic components is equal protection before the law. Also, that every person, both legal and natural person, is treated equally before the law. And then, secondly, of course, transparency. You know, make all what institutions are doing very much transparent. And of course, you can request that from state and public institutions. And you know, when EU institutions come to Central Eastern Europe, they always talk about transparency. But it's much more difficult to do this, to implement this in practice. There's a lot of resistance in environments which have been doing, you know, business the old way, you know, which is a secretive way, because transparency also brings accountability, which is also the third step, you know, to make those persons, both in business or in state and public institutions, accountable for violations. And for that to happen, you have to have very strong judicial institutions. You know, by strong, I mean, you know, fair, independent, impartial state institutions, which are not subject to influence from politics, but also from internal pressures. I find that, you know, in Central Eastern Europe, there is a lot of also these internal pressures on independence, you know, from higher levels of judiciary. I think there's even a judgment against Ukraine from European Court of Human Rights. It's a case from some years ago called Volkov versus Ukraine, about violations of internal independence, Article 6.1 of the European Convention. So yeah, transparency, accountability, and equal protection through the law. But then also educating, you know, people who are inside institutions, who are in the business sector, because one of the larger one of the largest obstacles in our region is that, you know, we are all for translating rule of law standards to Ukraine, to you know, Slovenia, Croatia, other countries, but then the problem is how to you know, implement them, how to make sure that people, so all of us, comply with those standards, because you know, these normative standards, they meet very embedded values, traditions, and culture in our countries, which have been developed and formed for many decades. So, and it's very hard to change this overnight, or even in three decades. We still see so many problems, as many cases from Central and Eastern Europe show, you know, both from obvious examples from Hungary and Poland, perhaps Bulgaria recently, also Slovenia, Romania, but also from former Soviet countries. So many examples where, you know, there is a disagreement about basic prohibitions, such as conflict of interest, you know, prohibition of conflict of interest. You know, there's so much, particularly in business human rights, you know, there is a lot of you know, conflict of interest between business and state actors in our countries, and there is no, what I find is, what I observe, that is no, you know, consensual condemnation when something like that happens, where even though when you have I mean, recently in Slovenia we had an example of one case where a company won a tender, and that company is headed by a man who is family member or family relations with the vice minister of the ministry who awarded the tender. You know, so very, very obvious cases where there is a conflict of interest. But even there, I mean, there is no consensus on that you should condemn such violations. And when there is no violations, then of course everything is allowed. You know? Everything goes, and power prevails over law, over regulations, and so on.
Yeah, thank you for this response. And actually, I should say that your vice prime minister just is not so clever as the vice ministers in the post-Soviet republics, because they avoid these correlations in formal ways, so it's not a problem for them at all. But you know, I have some dilemmas, in particular when we have a conversation with different companies in post-Soviet region. They are telling us that we can't start, you know, to be examples of responsible business conduct, because we are operating in this environment, and you can't expect from us responsible conduct when the state actually doesn't show responsible conduct per se. And in some cases, I even don't know what we can respond to them, because it's true, they have so strong pressure from some state agencies. They are operating in this, sometimes very unfair environment, unpredictable environment. So what can you respond to these companies? I know that it's not an easy question, but sorry for this.
I mean, rule law is a basic principle, and every company which operates in any legal system around the world is expected to comply with basic constitutional and statutory requirement. Period. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be no negotiations, no compromise. If there is a legal provision, is a law, then companies should comply with that. Another thing is, then when a government has a certain position or a certain, you know, geostrategic position or certain you know, perhaps conflict affected area, then of course it's difficult for companies to expect responsible business conduct. And their dilemma arises. I was recently in Armenia, in Yerevan, and Armenia is an example of such a country where because of its geographical location, which is not very very good from a geostrategic point of view, a lot of problems with different neighbors. Of course, one of the issues is how to generate economic growth and investment. And since the aggression on Ukraine started from the side of Russian Federation last February, of course, Armenian government and also Armenian economy, they seized this opportunity. And for example, if you look at the data for Armenia, Armenian economy for the last year, 2022, you can see that there is a quite impressive economic growth, which they experienced, I think, around 10%, and most of this economic growth is not because the some new fantastic product which was found or produced in Armenia, but it's because of so-called parallel imports and exports. Armenia serves as a as a country where a lot of companies import products from EU or export products to EU, and then they re-import and re-export them to Russian Federation. And of course, if you ask, and I was talking with some companies there, you would not they would not mention any problems or any hindrance or any dilemmas concerning responsible business conduct, having business with state-owned, some also state-owned companies from Russian Federations, which are involved in the aggression in Ukraine, which some of them they also have their own private armies. They don't have, they don't see any dilemmas or any business related, business and human rights related risk, and they are even more so, they support it from the government because the government wants, investment and growth and jobs, and so on. And that kind of circumstances, of course, it's difficult to persuade, companies which operate in Caucasus or Central area, Central Asia, which, in the last year, almost year and a half, have seized this business opportunity to increase their profits or investment. And it's very difficult then to persuade it. But still, I think even in that kind of environments, companies should be aware of risks which are facing them. And I think they should not just follow what the government says, what the executive branch say, that one should have good relations with that or another site in the war, but they have to comply with UNGPs on business and human rights. They have to comply with UNDP's guide on the heightened due diligence, human rights in conflict affected areas. So, Elena, I wouldn't say that this is a persuasive excuse. If the government says, well, business and human rights risks are not our concern. Our concern are people and growth and investment and jobs. I wouldn't agree that this is persuasive from the point of view of business and human rights and rule of law, because rule of law, in a way, it also includes business and human rights. Particularly when we talk about TIC conception of rule of law, I would argue that it also includes. Business and human rights regulation. They also include UNGPs on business and human rights. So such arguments, which we often see from some companies in some countries in the last year and a half, I don't think it's very persuasive.
Of course I agree, but of course we see, and probably especially when the situation is very complicated in economic sphere, that the investments go first, and all other things should go next. So yeah, it's a problem, really a problem, how to balance this And also because of the social expectations, you know, and because the business and human rights framework from the very beginning is based on this idea of social expectations, but we
Right,
see that in
exactly
our
right.
societies, social expectations are mostly about investments and economic growth, not about really human rights and responsible business conduct, unfortunately. You know, so probably, yeah, we need to try to
Yeah.
change social expectations.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and also my another dilemma, and I should say that I already asked some of my guests about that, but probably you are the best person to respond to it. I have a dilemma about oligarchic companies. You know, we have some companies that impacted our legal system and our political system very significantly in a negative way. And these companies are still in the market and they are still quite successful, and probably it's fine, but they also are going, you know, to be something like a champions on business and human rights. They have resources to implement human rights policies and so on. But the
Right.
question is, should we just give them this, chance to be good companies, or should we expect from them that they should recognize their past? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, companies which are led by oligarchs or tycoons, or they were established by oligarchs and tycoons, here I would make like a distinction between, you know, those companies which were established by oligarchs, you know, through this privatization process in the beginning of the 19th, you know, through the you know, certificates. And then some of them, particularly in the Russian Federation, they were in the beginning of 2000 again nationalized, so state took control or some of these companies, and then some of them or many of them also stayed privately owned. When we are talking about those who, you know, are now state-owned, for sure state has obligation and responsibilities to lead by example. The obligations of state concerning state-owned companies, either oligarch-based or oligarch-related or not, it's greater than privately owned companies. But when we are talking about privately owned oligarch and tycoon-based companies, I think it falls under, you know, pillar two, corporate responsibility to respect that those companies are very clear. The owners, no? The owners of those companies are very clear about the origins and also about how they were established. No? How were these processes? And I think they have. I would say I would argue that they have obligations to explain how. They created those companies, you know, because one of the expectations of society, as we said just now, is that you know, people you know, are informed about the origins and how, particularly oligarchs and tycoons, without mentioning now any names, established were established, because most of them, you know, and there has been a lot of written on, for example, Russian or Ukrainian, you know, oligarch companies and their origins. Many of them, a lot of commentators in different researches and books, they argue they were, you know, established through corruption, through the help of vested interest, some of them also through use of former or actual secret services, help of secret services. So yeah, you're right. That their origins is in some aspects quite it's quite great. So I think it falls under there too that they have to explain their origins from the business and human rights point of view. Why from business and human rights point of view? Because the way they were established, a lot of employees, but not only employees, have suffered business-related injuries, business-related human rights violations, either from violation of civil and political rights, you know, curtailing freedom of association, collective bargaining, or you know, by you know, terminating their employment, curtailing socioeconomic rights of employees or larger populations, you know, making difficult for people to make their ends meet. But nowadays, of course, I would welcome, and if any company, particularly in Central Eastern Europe, is very much on board on business and human rights standards, I would welcome that. But of course, as you know, Olena, now in Eastern Europe, I think there is also one article which is forthcoming in a special issue on business and human rights concerning Russia. You know, those companies which take business and human rights on board, they very rarely move beyond rhetorical commitment. They very rarely measure the impact of their activity, rights and environment, anti-corruptions, and so on. So yeah, to answer your question, I would say, yeah, they have company. I mean, oligarch companies, they have to be very clear and transparent about their origins if they want to be legitimate and credible actor in business human rights. If they want to fight, you know, persuasively the critics that is doing complying with business human rights standards because of you know, pressures from outside, and their commitments are only rhetorical. So yeah, they have to start from the scratch to be taken seriously.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Actually, I heard that I wanted to hear. So thank you. Thank you for this response. Yeah. And yeah, thank you for this great conversation. I enjoy it very much. And yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Olena, for the invitation. All the best.
Yeah, bye.